Hi, Spring fans. Welcome to a beautiful podcast. I'm your host, Spring Developer Advocate Josh Long, and this show is all about the real heroes behind Spring and its ecosystem.
Hey, Spring fans, how are you? I have had a good week. I spoke at DevNexus. That was cool. Love that conference. Speaking at the Java Day Live event tonight, by the way, that's Thursday the 18th of February, or Friday the 19th of February 2021 for most people because it's in Ukraine. That's exciting. I'm excited about that. That'll be fun. Join us there if you can. What else has been going on? Check out that talk I did for DevNexus, by the way. That talk is online somewhere. I'm not sure where. Ping me. I'll see if I can dig it up. I thought it was going to be a live presentation. That's still a thing for some conferences, right? So you pop in and you give a live presentation, even in the age of the pandemic where everything is virtual and remote. And I thought it was going to be one of those, but turns out it wasn't, and it's my bad. I completely missed the email. So I got a very, very friendly phone call reminding me that they wanted the pre-recorded thing on Saturday. And of course, the event was Wednesday. So imagine my chagrin when I realized I had to put together this presentation, which I had planned to give live. So I spent, you know, Saturday doing that, basically most of the day there, and it came out pretty well, if I do say so myself, and I will. You'll indulge me, but I will. It's a 30-minute thing that looks at the use of Spring Boot on Kubernetes. So there's a lot there. I hope you'll watch it. Maybe you'll like something. Maybe you'll learn something. Who knows? What else? I've been working on another video as well. This is a 2-hour video. I can't really say much about what it is just yet, but suffice it to say, it's a big one, and it'll be out soon. I'm hoping next week. And of course, you know, just watch my Twitter or whatever. Check out the Spring IO blog or something like that. What else? Guess that's about it, my friends. I mean, there's always, you know, this week in Spring, there's always good stuff there, right? I love all that stuff. So, you know, every week, ton of stuff. Spring Boot 2.4.3 is available, Spring Security 5.4.5, Spring Boot 2.3.9, Spring Data, you know, the usual parade of awesome and interesting that makes up the list of stuff. What else did I do? You know what else I did this week? I spoke at the Seattle Java User Group on Tuesday. I forgot about that. It's been a fun week, really, just a lot of good events. But I'm really excited about today's guest, right? Today's guest is the one, the only, the amazing, the inimitable Reshmi Krishna, who I had the pleasure of learning from and working with when she was at Pivotal. Now, of course, she's gone on to bigger and better things, and she worked at GitLab. I was so very pleased to invite her onto the show, and to have her accept was even more thrilling. So thank you, Reshmi, for joining us. Everybody else, I hope you enjoy the show. I hope you get something out of it. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. So happy we did it. I am so happy you're here. It's been a minute since we got a chance to talk. It's actually been a fair while since we got a chance to talk. So I'm just happy that you could make it. Today we have Reshmi Krishna, a manager at GitLab. And I don't want to ruin the rest. Can you introduce yourself? Like, what do you do there?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me, Josh. And thank you, everyone, to who's listening. My name is Reshmi Krishna, and I work as a manager for solution architecture team for the US West region in the Americas. And my background is I worked with Josh in Pivotal, and you know, I was there, and I was in solution architecture there as well. And before that, I was a developer on Wall Street. And I really had a good time on Wall Street. However, I really enjoyed the customer interaction side of the house a little bit more. As a result, I, you know, wanted to move to solution architecture, and I think I've been here in this role for a while, and I'm really enjoying myself.
Yeah. So when you and I were at Pivotal together for years, and you're not kidding. I was always amazed by how you were sort of just living and breathing and swimming in software, and it was just sort of every time I see you, you always had some talk. On a deep dive talk on some completely unrelated thing compared to what you had just talked about before. It's just the diversity of your thought processes is inspiring. The way you learn things is inspiring. So I was always very eager to learn from you every time we got a chance to you were at the time you were in New York, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's cool. We miss you, obviously. But GitLab is awesome. GitLab is, you know, just one of those really, really cool companies out there that I think mm-hmm. people are. Can you tell people what GitLab is in the way you want it to be represented?
Sure. Yeah. So in short, in one line, GitLab is a DevOps platform in a single application. So by that, what I mean is if you're doing source control management, if you're doing continuous integration delivery and deployments, and you have all these different security scanners in your code, GitLab can actually do all of that. And you can see all of that in one single UI. GitLab can either be self-hosted or it can actually be hosted in any of your cloud providers or virtualizations as you favor, right? So for example, if you today have Jenkins and Artifactory, Bitbucket, and a lot of these different tooling, GitLab can actually do all of that in one tool.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, so that's really, really cool. That's so it's a system that you can either host multi-tenant SaaS mm-hmm. or on-premise, which is yes. super useful, right? Mm-hmm. So you could in theory like air gap it.
Is yes. that the idea? Absolutely.
Wow, that is so cool. Is that do you use like Kubernetes or Terraform? I just wonder how you lay it all down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of different flavors, right? So we are very, very native Kubernetes. We have infrastructure as a code, which is Terraform. You have different ways of deploying GitLab and managing GitLab. And of course, we also have a lot of different architectures that you can either do like HA, you can do replication and so on and so forth. And, you know, we also have a professional services team in-house. So say they definitely like guide you, specifically in for your self-hosted GitLab.
Nice. That is so cool. So GitLab, can you tell us about you've got source code, you've got version control, you've got the ability to manage through Git. Mm-hmm. Your source code. Are there other backends besides Git?
Git is the primary
core backend.
Yeah, makes sense. We also have a lot of different, like for example, we have this thing called Auto DevOps pipeline, right?
Yeah.
So when you check in your code, you can see your code getting through all the different stages of your agile processes, so like plan, test, and then it goes into staging. And then you can also do performance validation. So for example, GitLab can, you know, test deploy your code into a browser and can tell you the performance. So we use a lot of these different open source toolings and some proprietary toolings, which goes in that platform, right? So we for example, we use like code scanners and so on, you know, that kind of goes into the platform as well.
Wow, that is so cool. So you can plug it in?
Yes.
Can people write their own plugins?
You can write your own plugins. However, you know, it's not encouraged because then it's like, how do you support it and so on. But you can definitely take like an open source plugin and kind of go from there as well.
Cool. And so as I understand it, the history is sort of interesting. It was originally written in Ruby. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. still true. And then some parts rewritten in Go.
Yep.
There's some Vue.js on the front end. Mm-hmm. So it really is. It's a brand new thing. This is not like, I mean, there are some other companies that claim to do ALM, application mm-hmm. lifecycle management.
Yep.
And those vendors have been talking about the same things for 20 years, you know, those aren't fun tools to deploy or to run, but this sounds like it'd be very easy to use. And it's open source, so people can actually try it out. So what's the difference? I guess if somebody wants to use the open source version, what is the thing that distinguishes that from the thing that GitLab sells?
Yeah, so open source, you can of course go into like GitLab.com, you know, kind of install it. That's the SaaS version. In terms of, you know, support, we are not going to provide support to the free or the open source version for GitLab,
sure.
right? So we are going to we do have a lot of customers who we do provide support to the free, and you know, I think we will continue to do that.
Right.
However, like going forward also in terms of proprietary GitLab, we are trying to move to a model where there are certain like additional capabilities in GitLab, that we want our users to use. So it can be in terms of like there's auto DevOps, as I spoke about, our pipelines, then our portfolio management technologies and so on. So if you're using a lot of those technologies, then for you, the next tier of GitLab, that makes sense. Specifically, if you want to use security, you would want to use the paid version, right? So when I say security, what do I mean by that? Let's say you're checking your code in, even in your dev environment. GitLab has the ability to tell you, hey, Josh, you have X, Y, and Z vulnerabilities in your code. Wow. And by the way, you are violating these licenses, especially if you're doing Spring Boot. These are some of the licenses that we have open source, right? So there are some vulnerabilities there, and it kind of has that power to tell you, right?
Yeah.
I, as a developer, find that really, really useful. I don't have to wait for my code to be like committed, staged, before I know all of this, right? So I can make the changes even before I deploy the code.
I was wrong. I mean, I'm always wrong, but I was wrong about my understanding of, I was expecting, since it's like an enterprise thing, sells on-prem, I was expecting the price tag would be a little heftier, but I'm looking on the website. What is it? So you've got like, you know, $19 a month for multiple teams, you know, that includes multiple users, right? You know, what is that? 10,000 CI/CD minutes. I mean, that's $19 a month. That's a few drinks at Starbucks. I mean, that's nothing, right? Like it's cross team management, multi-region support, and new priority support. Somebody will pick up the phone and answer. And then if you want to scale to $99 a month, which again, this is like for the whole company. I don't understand. Is that SaaS, or can you also get $99 a month? Okay.
There's a SaaS, yeah. So the on-prem is a little bit higher. Sure. However, I would say in terms of industry standards, it's still like, you know, on par with the other competitors and so on.
$99, that's incredibly good.
Yep.
What's missing? What's the catch? I don't know what the competition is, but it looks like you can manage a whole company for $100 a month. Is that normal?
Yeah, there's no catch, right?
Okay. $99 is for SaaS and on-prem.
Yes.
That makes it even crazier. That's like, so I could actually I could afford that. Josh, not my company. I don't need to ask my company for that. That is really crazy. What's the competition cost? I don't even want to know. That's crazy. $99 a month. I should do some research more. I thought I knew about you, but I had no idea that this was so good. That's so cool.
VMware is actually a partner of GitLab. So if you would like, you can definitely use that, right?
Absolutely. That's a good point. I should do that. I wonder if they can let me have a copy of it or something. But again, even that, I don't really need to do that just because it's $99, right? Cool. Okay. Well, anyway, I will certainly try and get myself an account. I'll bet I can expense it, but I don't even. That's the thing. Since it's just me, I don't even need the whole $99 thing. That's a whole company. How many users? It can't be like a whole company. I can't just like spend $99 and like suddenly a company the size of IBM is set up. Is
no,
that true?
No, it's one user actually. $99 per user per month.
Oh, thank God. Okay, that makes more sense. Okay.
Yeah. So it's okay, not that, for the whole,
that's still fine. You've got a version that's $4 a month, which is, you know, single team project management. So it's so $4 for each member of a single team.
Yes.
Which is fine. That gets you know, how big is your team going to be? 10 people? I mean, still $40 a month for crazy, crazy useful product. I guess I should check all out. I should check out GitLab. I always just kind of thought of it as Git. I didn't know that there was a issue tracker and continuous delivery. I didn't know about any of that. Do you have a package management and release software, or do you just
integrate? Sorry, go ahead.
Or do you integrate with other things like whatever, Artifactory?
We do integrate. However, we also have that inbuilt, right? So you don't have to, like, you can view all of that, all of your processes through GitLab.
Wow, that is cool. So can you do container registries?
No, you can't do container registries. You would I mean, if you use, okay, so let me reframe that. You can do container registry if you do auto DevOps pipelines through GitLab. Yes, we do have container registries in terms of like, we do integrate with our proprietary container and open source container registries that right. we use. You can also tie into like Docker container registries and so on.
Okay.
So you can do that.
Okay. But it's not provided as part of the core thing. It's, you have to install somebody else's, something else's.
It is core if you buy the ultimate. So you see in the GitLab.com.
Yeah.
Right. Go back. If you buy ultimate, actually you get all of that.
So that is crazy. That is amazing. Well, okay, I'll just check it out. I guess I should get started. I just need Linux and Kubernetes, huh? Or maybe Terraform, something like that.
I mean, if you do the SaaS, then you don't even need that, right?
Oh yeah.
If you need
the SaaS is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
The SaaS, because I use GitHub, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay, right? No problems there, I guess. But I always kind of wonder about, like, you know, what about if I want my own project or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. And not to mention, if I'm a small team, I think the economies of scale, you know, aren't really there. So being mm-hmm. able to have my own on-premise thing would be very useful, I think.
Yeah, not you to can mention, definitely. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure this is a big deal inside of financial enterprises and things like that as well. So I got to check it out. The issue board, group issue board, time tracking.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can actually do, okay, that's crazy. You've got a wiki built in?
Yep. And you know, the interesting part is we dock food a lot of this in GitLab, right? So GitLab, yeah. I don't know if you know, it's an all remote async company. So we were always all remote, even before COVID.
Yeah. Right?
So the way we work is we work async, we use our product every day,
yeah.
in and out. We use all of these features that we sell. Also, like in terms of culture and the values, we have these values called credit values.
Right.
And what that is that's the core of the GitLab enterprise when you work in GitLab is we have collaboration, results efficiency, diversity, inclusion, and belonging, iteration, and transparency.
Right.
So essentially, you're expected to work as a collaborative team. However, you as an individual have direct responsibilities for certain tasks.
Sure.
So one of the concepts I learned here is when I come here, of course, you do a lot of work in the issues, right? So issues is if you want to do something, you create an issue and a lot of people will come in and comment on the issues. However, you as a directly responsible individual have that ability to either take the feedback or do whatever you want. Right. So the most important thing for us is results and efficiency.
Yeah.
To keep the needle moving every day. And I think this is very interesting because I've never worked in an all remote company before. I've always had days when I, you know, went into work and, but I think it's really interesting. Also GitLab, it really, as a company, really gives you that work-life balance that other companies talk about, even without COVID, right?
Right.
So as I was telling you, I have a two-year-old and I can actually set my own hours. Of course, I have meetings because I'm part of the customer success team. So I have right. customers and so on. But I think it's a really, really cool company just beyond the product as well to work with. And we have a lot of like amazing individuals that you can work with together.
That's really cool. I like the idea that you're actually building the business on top of GitLab. So yes. GitLab is GitLab. Everything about GitLab is GitLab.
Yes.
And that explains why there are so many features. While we've been talking, I've been scrolling down the about.gitlab.com page, just looking at the features and reading them as we're talking. And it took me minutes, several minutes. I was listening to you talk for the last, and I was talking to you for the last several minutes, and all the while I'm still scrolling. It's
yep.
crazy how many things this thing does. I had no idea. Okay, so people need to pay attention. I need them to go try GitLab, and that's cool. I'm I might be your next customer. So you've got this really results oriented organization. I like that. You're built on top of collaboration. I like that. You've got your own tasks for which each individual member is responsible. I like that. That said, I think you're describing the game Among Us. Have you played that game?
No, I haven't. Oh. What's that game?
Mm-hmm. Well, in that game, everybody has their own tasks and they have to get them mm-hmm. done on the crew of a spaceship. But it's all about transparency. You have to surface your status for the rest of the organization to see what's happening. And the reason you have to surface your status is because one of the – well, this is where the analogy with GitLab stops, right? But one of the people in the crew is an imposter. Mm-hmm. They're out to kill you, right? And so you have to have constant meetings or surface – you have to surface information, right? In GitLab, it's more passive and friendly, but same idea. You call a meeting to surface information about who you've seen that's behaving suspect, we say, you know, suspect, sus, S-U-S.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if they're being sus.
Like shady about it.
Yeah, like if they're not doing their task or if they're like standing there like they're doing something to sabotage the ship or the efforts of the crew, then you got to vote them out. You got to like eject them from the airlock, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I guess that doesn't happen at GitLab. Nobody gets ejected from the airlock there, I suspect. but everything else, it sounds like this would be a very good way to run a crew. CICD.
We, mm-hmm. we also have this concept of a handbook where we write everything, right? So essentially, we don't want to have a lot of meetings. So we write everything in a handbook and we do our merge requests and we kind of discuss. There's a lot of discussion happening and some of them are public, right?
Right.
Our handbook is public. You can go and take a look at what's happening, you know, and who's doing what, their roles and everything. A lot of the information in GitLab is public. And I think that's something that's really interesting.
You're not kidding. I just found it. 10,400 pages of text.
Yep.
When printed. It's just huge. It's everything. It's like, wow, this is crazy cool. And you know what? I got to tell you, I like the things I'm seeing here. They've even got like discussions on hiring and, you know, inclusion and diversity efforts. And I love that, right? I love when, I mean, you get this kind of, you get a better place to work when everybody's on the same page about certain things, you know? And that's a really great point. That's, look at this. I could learn a lot from
that. Yeah. Also, you know, we as solution architects, right? So we are just doing this exercise about cognitive biases and how to be psychologically safe. However, this is very like team oriented. So we have a lot of discussions about this. So it's not just something is written in the handbook and forgotten, but it's something that we live every day, right? And we all agree that we all are like work in progress. So just, you know, have that growth mindset.
Yeah.
Where you try to like improve and have that iteration for iterative values, right? Also, I really like our CEO, he's really cool. He actually approved one of my merge requests and I was like, oh my God.
so cool.
The CEO needs to approve the merge request, but it's a lot of like, you know, we don't, although you can see we have some hierarchy, but it's a relatively flat organization and it's a very, very interesting place to work in.
It sounds like the, you know, to carry my analogy further, it sounds more like the crew of the Star Trek Enterprise,
mm-hmm.
not the crew of the Among Us.
Amongst Us,
game. That sounds great. I mean, I didn't know any of this. I wonder if any other company has a whole wiki that just sort of describes every little thing about the business, like this handbook thing. That's cool. The technical stuff is there, but I'm just super impressed that you've got a whole thing on culture and diversity and just really, thousands and thousands of pages.
Yep.
Wow. Good for you.
Also, of course, you know, we specialize in remote work, right? So we have a remote workplace, like that's what we always were. So we have somebody named Darren Murph leading that organization practices, remote practices. So a lot of the companies that we work with are consulting with us to just kind of understand what does it mean to be all remote, right?
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to have this kind of a lifestyle, which we weren't really used to? And, you know, my background is Wall Street. We were never working from home at that time, right? Yeah.
Okay, cool. So let's talk about that, if you don't mind. I want to take a hard left turn. because I could sit here and just explore the features of GitLab all day. I confess, I really should have, prepared more for GitLab. Mm-hmm. I kind of thought I had a sense of what it was doing, but I didn't expect it to be that crazy cool. There's just a lot there. But what got you here? I mean, I know you were at Pivotal before, mm-hmm. right? And Pivotal, mm-hmm. you worked with all the customers, basically. Like I just remember seeing you credited with so many successes all around the organization all the time, right? So I was just very impressed. And then also you ran user groups, right? Mm-hmm. Cloud native user groups and so on. So you're obviously, why, of all the places you could have ended up, why did you choose GitLab instead of whatever? Some other, I mean, there's just, it seemed like you had a thousand paths you could have walked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's like, for me, when I chose GitLab, so I had some options and, I decided to go with GitLab because primarily number one, I believed in the values, right? That was a very, very important thing for me, to be diverse, inclusive, and not only that, to belong to an organization where you can contribute to change. Right. I think that was the primary factor for me. The second was the potential to have an impact in the organization.
Yeah.
And also just to, run a solution architecture team and kind of go from there. I think that was, again, I was moving to San Francisco from New York. And at that time I was like, well, I want to do something different. So yeah. GitLab seemed like a perfect organization for me, mid-sized, growing enormously, scaling. And yeah. I come from a place where I have seen a lot of these challenges before, however, not potentially in these, quantities, or not essentially these exact challenges. So it was right. to a point where I would challenge not only myself, but also my mindset, and, I would grow with the company. And that's exactly where I wanted to be.
Oh, that is so cool. That is great. So when you're, as a manager, you must meet and see and work with a lot of different organizations, right? What are the sort of issues, technical issues that they need, your help with, right? I'm just trying to figure out it sounds like you've got everything that somebody would need out of the box. So I'm trying to figure out what's not there. What do you have to do?
Mm-hmm.
Why do they call your team in?
Right. So a lot of the challenges are essentially most of the organizations and enterprises we work with, they already have some kind of SCM, CI/CD. They're in some path towards that journey, right?
Right. Cloud native.
So I think cloud native or digital transformation or... So yeah. I think the reason we get involved is to identify a lot of those bottlenecks and to really identify and hone in where really GitLab can contribute, right?
Right.
So in GitLab, our sales strategy is, land and expand. So essentially, you pick a place in the customer journey where you would like to make a difference, and then you go from there, right? And that's where my team is called in, because as team of specialists, the solution architects, a lot of the times people don't understand, I have Jenkins or I have Artifactory. I do it this right. way. How do I do this with GitLab, right? And a lot of the times there's also a lot of processes, issues with processes, right? For example, if you have an existing team that's using Jenkins, why should they adopt GitLab, right?
Right.
What's why should they, and what are some of the features that they can benefit from there?
Is it fair to say that there's a bit of an opinion about the structure and processes of a given organization that you need to take when you embrace GitLab, or you won't get the most value out of it?
I would say GitLab is customizable.
Yeah.
It works for you, right? But in order for it to work for you, we have to understand where exactly does it fit in your organization.
Right. Right?
So in the enterprise, generally, you would never work with the customer. I never say never, but most often you will not work with the customer who don't have anything, who don't have any of these existing tools, right?
Right.
So definitely figuring out that journey of either how do we integrate GitLab? So again, we don't say that replace. We do say we integrate, right? how do we integrate? How do we kind of, you know, facilitate the next level in your journey and kind of go from there? So that's a lot of conversation that we have and a lot of expertise that we get.
Is there an aspect of training to that as well?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
I see. Because what I'm seeing, like, for example, if I wanted to do waterfall development, mm-hmm. right? I love a lot of the stuff that comes from Atlassian, but Jira, you could probably do waterfall with that, right? It's not, yep. there's nothing agile about Jira unless you enable a certain thing, right? The plugin or whatever. It's not, there's no opinion there. It's just a generic issue tracker, mm-hmm. you know, like all other issue trackers. But GitLab is, you know, I can see you've got continuous delivery. That's not just tech. That's an opinion. They're trying to help. You're trying to help people deliver software, not just write issues about software, right? And store code for software.
And also deploy software, right? I think that's another important thing. You can deploy to Kubernetes. We have Helm chart integrations and so on. You can use any of that, right? So that's another key component of GitLab.
Right. That's cool. So as an organization, it seems like is it fair to say there's a preference or a strong sense of what defines a GitLab, an ideal GitLab customer, right? Is that somebody who's trying to do continuous delivery, trying to do frequent builds, or is it just anybody, right? Like anybody with software in their organization will work.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to, you know.
So that's a great question, right? So the way GitLab is divided, like I work for enterprise. We have teams who work for mid-market teams. We have team who works for commercial. So remember in Pivotal, we would have financial services, retail, and different verticals, right? Here, it's more like region specific. And I, as a West team, I cover all the enterprise accounts. So we have a user threshold, generally the number of developers which, you know, kind of engage with per company.
Yeah.
So the company needs to meet those thresholds to be considered an enterprise customer. And or we also have mid-market customers and commercial customers and so on, right?
Yeah.
So we do have different teams, those covers these different enterprises, right? I would say the perfect customer for us, although you know it really differs, it's somebody who understands the value of not only SCM and CI/CD, but the whole path through deployment.
I see.
You understand why you need a DevOps platform like this.
Right.
Because I think that's a lot of our battle nowadays, right? So a lot of the times we are stuck with fighting with tools, right? So if I call like Jenkins or Jira, these are tools versus this is the whole methodology, right? How do you continuously deploy your code in production? So for example, we had a customer who went from deploying software in production every 6 months to 2 weeks. Now, that's part GitLab, but that's also part their processes. They had to change a lot of their processes, right? So you have to be open to that kind of transformation, right? So I would say that's our ideal customer who has that mindset.
I see. So if somebody wanted to, they could just go there, sign up. And if they know, you know, if they want to, they pay, you know, $4 or whatever the minimal amount, right, per month, mm-hmm. per user. And if they wanted to, they could just start using it as a integrated Jira or an integrated, Git or whatever. Mm-hmm. They could do that. But it seems like that'd be a big waste, you know? Like it seems like they're missing a bigger picture there. And that's interesting, right?
Right.
Wow.
However, I would say you need to start small. Right.
Sure.
You need to start somewhere in the journey where you're comfortable with. Right.
Yeah.
And then kind of adopt the whole platform. Again, this is something that, you know, my team is equipped to help you with.
That's just awesome.
Yeah.
So, cause it's the same for a lot of the people that we talk to, right? Like it was very much about, you could just use open source Cloud Foundry and open source Spring.
Yep.
You know, we're not stopping you. Obviously, it's open source. We want people to use it, obviously. But the organizations that really got the most amazing results are the ones that either already knew how to be agile and how to deliver and how to focus on that, or they were willing to learn. And they came to us for help with that. You know, it's just always, I like customers that want to deliver as opposed to want a Java framework or same thing. Mm-hmm. These customers that come to me and say, I want to deliver software faster, mm-hmm. safer, you know.
Absolutely.
That's very different from somebody who says, I just want a container orchestrator.
Exactly. You exactly.
know, missing something.
Absolutely. Yep.
So GitLab seems like a natural complement. I wonder if there's any, don't tell me. I'm just wondering. I wonder how many customers of ours are common, you know, because it sounds like a lot of the people that like what we're doing would also like what you're doing, you know. That's very interesting.
For sure. Also, like we have alliances team, right, that works with VMware. We are doing the Tanzu Tuesday, I believe, one of the factories. Yeah. We are doing a webinar with Tanzu in March.
Nice.
I personally did a spring cloud native workshop with Tanzu. I believe it was in October.
For a spring one?
It was part of spring one workshop. Yes.
Yeah.
It was one of the workshops that I did hands-on.
Very well received.
It was really, really cool. And you know, at the end of the day, I'm a developer at heart. So I love to just play around with technology and I get to do that.
Oh, that's so cool.
I really like that.
Yeah. You're a legend. That's so cool. What is, so you were at Pivotal then. And by the way, you are legendary. I mean, I'm just so impressed with all the stuff you got your fingers into, you know, the in terms of code and infrastructure and all that stuff. And that's, you know, anybody who's worked doing solutions architecture for a large company like Pivotal knows you cannot afford to be a specialist, right? There's no room for that. Nobody in that organization can just sit there and say, I focus only on databases and nothing else, you know, nothing else matters, you know?
Yep.
So I'm always impressed with people who can get in there and don't drown. Me, I would drown if I had to do all of that, you know, all the time. But you and, you know, it's hard. It's super hard. So what got you to that? Like you said, you came from Wall Street before that.
Mm-hmm.
I've also heard stories about that being very grueling as well. So what was the motivation? What changed? Why would you come to Pivotal?
Yeah, so I came to Pivotal by chance. I actually didn't know about Pivotal, and this was way back in 2015.
Oh, wow.
I had a friend who worked in Pivotal as a data engineer. And then he kind of told me, hey, do you know Pivotal and do you know Resales? And I was like, no, I don't know what both of those things are. So I interviewed and then I figured out, I was like, well, let me join the pre-sales role. And it seems interesting. And the reason it was interesting to me the first time I heard about it is you get to work with customers and solve those problems, right? So when I was working in Wall Street, I worked both in an investment firm and a hedge fund, and I was building those softwares. However, I never got to work. I wouldn't say never, because I got to talk about requirements and so on, but never really got to feel how it, you know, kind of just see the customer using our product, get
all
that
right.
real feedback. Also talk about challenges, right? So I always talk about, and I wrote a blog about this, about solution architecture and by solution architecture, because I do think one of the key traits is empathy of solution architects, right? And just listening to the, you know, it can be stuff related to software. It can be related to processes and people. I'm not saying they're going to solve everything, but I think the most important role for a solution architect is just to sit down and listen, right? And just be those trusted advisors for your customers. And that's why I got to love Pivotal and solution architecture in general. I could give my unbiased opinion to a customer about using our product or using a certain features, and the customers would trust me, right? So even they could email me at 10 p.m. at night, not that I'm expected to respond, and say, hey, I'm having this issue. You know, what's going on? Or, you know, the product is this X, Y, and Z, what's going on? And I can just respond and even get our product team on board, and they can just talk with each other, right?
Right.
So I really like that part. And on top of that, I still get to be technical, right?
Yeah.
I still get to build software and present at conferences and, you know, do my own. So I love distributed tracing and
right.
monitoring and Spring, Java. Right. And that was my background, Java, Spring. Yeah. I always worked in Java.
Do you sling any Ruby code these days?
No. Oh, I'm still a Java Spring Boot person.
That's so cool.
Did you migrate to writing Ruby?
Me? No. No. But I'm not as smart as you are. I thought you might have, you know, like.
No. I actually looked at Python for a while.
Python's like, nice.
Yeah.
I learned Ruby. I learned Python. I use Python a lot. Not as much as the JVM, but it's the language with which I've got the largest unbroken, you know, the second largest unbroken streak of experience, you know, for mm-hmm. since 1999, I've been using Python.
That's awesome.
I even had a few jobs professional in Python. Oh, Python's, wow. I love Python, respect, you know, so it's such a nice language. Ruby seems nice too, but I just never needed it because I already had Python.
Server side. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's cool. I don't know. You used to work at Pivotal. I used to work at Pivotal. We had Pivotal Labs, a lot of really smart people that knew how to do Ruby and Rails. I should have learned. Maybe I could have sent pull requests to GitLab. So that's kind of cool.
You can still do that. I think if you read Ruby, it's very like, I guess not similar, but you can read Ruby, right? So for example, in Python, I struggle with the whole white spaces and the tabs concept. Of
Python.
But Ruby is, I feel like it's an easier language for us to read and figure out and do the whole pull request, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I never had issues with the spacing in Python, mm-hmm. but I know it's an issue. And for some reason, I know this sounds ridiculous. It does not bother me.
Interesting.
It does not bother me in Python, but it bothers me very, very much in YAML, right?
Interesting.
So I feel like a hypocrite. I don't know. It just one offends me, and the other one is Python. You know, I don't know how to think about it any other way. You know, oh well, whatever. Okay, so you were at Pivotal, and then how long were you there? Years, right? Many, many years.
Almost 5 years.
And then. What happened before that? Wall Street. So, like this is where I'm kind of interested in.
Yeah. So you know, I majored in computer science. I did my master's from UPenn, and then I didn't know a lot about Wall Street, right? So
right.
I was an intern in one of the investment firms, and I loved New York, and I was like, wow, this is cool. Never lived in New York before, right? And I think that was one of my motivators to join.
Yeah.
Wall Street. And then, you know, I was doing a lot of, again, Java work. I worked in both the rates team and the equities and different teams in the investment bank. And then kind of went from there. And at some point I realized, so maybe this is my personality. I want to be the best at what I do, right?
Yeah.
It might take me time to get there, but I have to believe in myself that I'll get there. At some point in my career on Wall Street, I just couldn't see myself working those many hours a day, and it was grueling at some point, and kind of being the best developer that I can be out there. I knew a lot of developers who were amazing, and I was like, well, I don't know if I'm really passionate about this, right? And I can work 12 on 14 hours a day.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas when I lean into solution architecture, I feel like I can do this X number of hours a day and I'll be happy. I'll just be happy talking to customers and solving issues. And it's just a different kind of work. And also when you're coding. So for example, now when I go back and I code, I really enjoy that because it's not something I'm doing every day, 12 or 14 hours a day.
Right.
Right. Versus something that I was doing. And, you know, at that time, of course, I didn't realize and so on. But I do think that's what also makes us, because a lot of the times people say, well, developers cannot be people or people person, or they cannot go and speak to customers. But that's not true. I think a lot of the developers that I've personally worked with, they excel at that, and they would love to have a chance. However, as developers, sometimes you cannot leave your desk.
Right. Too much of both. I think you get better product when you get people involved. So I don't understand why you wouldn't want your engineers talking to customers. That's a great insight there that you've got. Yeah. Okay. So working on Wall Street sounds hard. I wouldn't be exactly the kind of thing I could manage for more than a few days. I think I'd just wither. But what was the tech stack like there? Were the use cases there very different from the use cases that you found when you weren't to talk to customers for Pivotal?
No, actually similar, because I worked with financial customers, very, very similar use cases. And I think the work in Wall Street really gave me that perspective, right? So when I went in, I actually understood what they were talking about. I understood their pain. I understood when they talked about, hey, we can't get here. This is not how our team works. This is never going to work. I got that, right?
Yeah.
So I think working on Wall Street, and I hear that it's changing, really gave me that perspective to connect with the enterprise customers in general, right? And have that empathy, which I think I wouldn't have had if I started in a startup and, you know, I kind of did my own stuff. So I think it was really eye-opening for me. And I definitely think that makes me a better solution architecture, at least in the enterprise.
Nice. That's so cool. Okay. Well, that's a very interesting journey you've walked. And I just love the idea that if this is true, you just tell me, but it sounds like you started doing more pure play engineering, and slowly from there, you started focusing on the much harder problems of integrating people, right? Making it easier for people to collaborate. Because technology at the end of the day is just a tool, right? You really want to enable people, because that's how you get better results. So it sounds like now it's very easy to see how you went from Wall Street to GitLab. And I love that that progression. That's really cool. I have learned a lot. I obviously thank you for your time. I didn't know half what we just talked about for GitLab. So that's amazing. Where should people go if they want to find you on the internet, if you want to be found on the internet?
Sure. Yeah. So you can, of course, you know, search me in LinkedIn. You can connect with me on Twitter. My handle is Rashmi9K.
Okay, 9K.
Yeah. All right. And of course, go check out GitLab.com. Let us know. We have a very active Twitter community as well. You know, let us know if you have any questions, any feedback, and definitely would love to connect with you all.
Awesome. Is it just at GitLab?
Sorry, at GitLab. Oh, the, let me Twitter. Get you the handle. Yeah, one second. Yes, it's at GitLab.
Alrighty. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Josh. I love chatting with you. Take care.
A Beautiful Podcast is produced by me, Josh Long. I do these podcasts because I believe that everything we do in software is for and made better by people. I want to hear from you. I'm Josh at joshlong.com by email, or at starbuxman on Twitter, where, of course, my direct messages are wide open. Do you have guest ideas, topic suggestions, feedback? Don't hesitate to reach out. If you like the show, then please consider rating it on iTunes and leaving a review, as it really helps the show. I sampled music from Steve Combs' Them from Morning in Springtime and Steve Combs' Small Victory, both of which are licensed under a Creative Commons license. I'm trying to hire production assistants to make the production of this podcast easier. I want to make sure that we can add things like show notes and transcripts and just generally do more. If you would like to advertise on the show, then please reach out to me. And if you can't or don't want to advertise but would like to otherwise support the show, then please consider supporting me at patreon.com, patreon.com/Josh Long, for as low as $4 a month. Thanks again. No harm came to any seasons in the making of this podcast.